Hey guys, so
Hello.
Fiona and Kate here. We're doing a podcast tonight because we just got back from a beautiful week's holiday at Moreton Island, where we go every year together as the family. And we were reading our favourite books over there, and we just had this idea. We were like, when we get back, we should do a podcast on what we're reading at the moment. And yeah, we thought we would start with what we've both been involved with lately, the Celestine Prophecy.
So the Celestine Prophecy is a series of books by author James Redfield. And I actually came across these books when quite a number of years ago when we were down in Melbourne. And the reason why we were in Melbourne was actually to do with a business that Kate and I were running, which was a vintage clothing store. And so we were doing the rounds of looking for things for the store, and that evening we were staying at a little like bed and breakfast type place, and they had this little bookcase that had some books that people left behind, and you could just take a book if you wanted one. And I started reading this book called The Celestine Prophecy, and it just absolutely captivated me. And then I realised that there was a whole series of them, and the whole series was actually there in this bookcase.
For free. Just to take.
It was designed to be to pass on when someone's finished with it. And I took full advantage of that. And I read those books. And
within 2 weeks.
Oh, yeah. I just couldn't stop.
All four. She was like, just like, this is the most amazing thing I've ever read.
But at the time, it wasn't something that Kate managed to get around to reading. She went back to doing what she was doing in Byron Bay, and it wasn't until recently when she had a situation that meant that she was spending a bit of time chilling
AKA
out.
AKA broke my ankle in three places and could not walk, and also broke my hand at the same time. So, yeah, I was chilling here with Mum for a few weeks, as you can imagine.
And so that's when the books came out, and she got to share the Celestine Prophecy and the insights that they bring. And so that's where we'll go on from there, is to we want to actually bring those insights to you guys and talk about them one by one.
Yeah, so I remember when Mum brought out the books when I had my broken ankle, and she said, oh, I'm going to give this to my sister to start reading. I remember how amazing these books were, and I just thought, oh, well, you know, if it's that amazing, I'll give it a crack. Like, she's going on and on about it. So, and I thought, you know, I have heard quite a lot of my friends and people talking about this Celestine Prophecy. And I thought, well, now's the perfect time to read it, because I've got, you know, can't walk. So I might as well read some books. And yeah, that first book, The Celestine Prophecy, truly blew my mind. It was just incredible. It was like a whole new reinvigorated lust for life, really, like just like a refresh on my third eye, I guess. It was just opening everything up for me, and it was like all this information that I'd learned over the past years actually combined in one book, and it was truly actually giving me these insights. So I was reading things, and then something else from another book or some other person had said something, or even an experience that had happened to me in my waking life or my dreaming life, clicked, and I couldn't believe it. I was like, these are things, like questions that I've had for ages, you know, a year, more, like many years, you know. There was all these different things that were clicking, and this book seemed to just answer them all. And I couldn't believe it. I was saying to Mum, this is amazing. I've got to read all four. So I'm on the fourth book now, the last book in the series, called The 12th Insight. And the first book goes over the first 9 insights. Second book goes on to just the 10th insight. Then there's the third book, which is the 11th insight. So yeah, I'm like halfway through the 12th at the moment. But Mum has read all of them, and she's rereading them now because I was just raving on and on and on about how transformational it's been for me in my life. Just the best thing to ever happen to me, I reckon.
Well, I'll just give you a little bit of a... this is the author's note from The Celestine Prophecy. And so it just gives you a little bit of an insight to what he's about. As I said, his name is James Redfield, and he was it was a number one New York Times bestseller. And they're written in the concept of a novel. So it's a very easy read for people who are not so much wanting to go down the path of a technical type book, or it's almost like reading an adventure. In fact, he calls it an adventure. He puts it in the hands of a couple of people that you're following throughout the whole series of books. So what he starts off with here is, he says, a new consciousness has been entering the human world, a new awareness that can only be called transcendent spiritual. If you find yourself reading this book, then perhaps you already sense what is happening, already feel it inside. It begins with a heightened perception of the way our lives move forward. We notice those chance events that occur at just the right moment and bring forth just the right individuals to suddenly send our lives in a new and important direction. Perhaps more than any other people in any other time, we intuit higher meaning in these mysterious happenings. We know that life is really about a spiritual unfolding that is personal and enchanting and magical, an unfolding that no science or philosophy or religion has yet fully clarified. And we know something else as well. We know that once we do understand what's happening, how to engage this elusive process and maximize its occurrence in our lives, human society will take a quantum leap into a whole new way of life, one that realizes the best of our tradition and creates a culture that has been the goal of history all along. So the story is offered towards this new understanding. If it touches you, if it crystallizes something that you perceive in life, then pass on what you see to another. For I think our new awareness of the spiritual is expanding in exactly this way, no longer through hype nor fad, but personally through a kind of positive psychological contagion among people. All that any of us have to do is suspend our doubts and distractions long enough, and miraculously this reality can be our own. So that's the author's note. And I totally agree with that. It's very much something that takes you on a journey, and you just won't be able to put it down.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, I guess, leads us on to the first insight that that book talks about, which they call it the critical mass realization of these mystical things like synchronicity and things that are happening that people are going, you know, that can't be, or that's a healing miracle, or it just can't be that that person arrived at that right time to, you know, save it. You know, all these things that are happening. And
yeah, it's the same with people call it a hunch or intuition. It's something that comes on where you suddenly read something or you hear about something, and it's just something that is an opportunity that you might envisage. Now, it might feel like it's almost destiny. It might be some explained force that induces a feeling of like a mystery or excitement, and that's something that actually makes us feel more alive. So I know that when I find something that
ignites
you,
something,
you get
a
that
spark.
Feeling inside you, and it does.
It's exciting.
Energizes you. It makes you feel there's something goes on in your physical being that really makes you want to activate and put something out there.
Well, so I think it gives meaning and purpose to our life and our experience, where the more and more these things happen, the more you feel like you're really onto something, or that you're helping create something happen, you know.
Yeah, well, that's what they're saying. There's more and more people, you know, it's not something new. Everyone's known for a long time that there's something to coincidences, or getting that that thought in your mind that you want to speak to someone, and then the phone rings and that's that person. That's also that intuition, or that that concept of recognizing that there are coincidences.
But the first insight in particular is about this awareness getting to a critical mass.
Yes.
And it's like what you said before, it's contagious. It rubs off on people and it spreads. And yeah, it's quite amazing. Like, people can then go about their lives with less fear and doubt and feel more confident in their decisions, which really is something quite beautiful for us all to experience, to have faith in something that is a journey unfolding. There's purpose to your life.
Yep.
And I think that's the most precious thing for humans to have.
I mean, that concept of reaching a critical mass is talked about in a lot of different ways, that, you know, essentially reaching a critical mass is at a point where enough people are thinking or doing something that it becomes normal. And when something becomes normal and expected, then a lot of people are doing it, and it reaches forward to the next level. So gradually, as we build on something, we, I guess, are finding that there is something that we're reaching for into the future.
And that takes us on to the second insight, really, in the book, which is about the complete world view, the history of that building of awareness. It's conscious evolution. In the Celestine Prophecy and the second insight, it particularly focuses on the last 500 years of human consciousness.
Yeah, well, it took 1,000 years to evolve the modern way of looking at things. And to really understand where we are today, you've got to take yourself back to like 1,000 years ago and then move forward through the entire millennium, because you can't just look at your own life. You have to actually look at a period that gives a historical perspective to where we've come from.
Exactly, to put us in perspective, like you just said, is it's not just all about how things are going now. It's like, well, take a step back and remember that so many people have come before you, so many souls, so many humans have come and contributed to this story that we're creating, this human evolution, and you're just one person contributing and sharing.
That's
and
right. And here we
going
are.
About.
Yeah, we're at the end of, we're at the beginning now of the next millennium, but we've just come through the end of a 1,000-year period, or a 2,000-year period even. But if you imagine what it was like to be alive back in the year 1000, which was called the Middle Ages, that was a time that was defined by very powerful churchmen. And they held a lot of influence over the minds of the population at the time. And they were the ones that described the world as a spiritual reality. That's where God's plan for mankind was at the very centre of life. And it didn't matter whether you were a peasant or a king. It was all about that spirituality. But the people who had that influence were the churchmen, and effectively those churchmen were the ones that people looked up to as the interpreters of the scriptures about how they should live, what was right and what was wrong. And that was more important than what you did as a job. That was the main criteria of how people lived.
Until people started finding, like, hang on, there's some corruption going on here. This isn't right. This isn't adding up. What's happening behind these closed doors of the churches? And are we really getting the truth? Faith started to be lost as these things were coming out. And people started, you know, this, again, critical mass got together and thought, hang on, this isn't right. Something's not right. What are we, who are we, and why are we here if this is all a bit going haywire with the churchmen? So they sort of said, all right, well, let's explore nature. And
before that, just the reason why that there was effectively a rebellion that took place, and that was, you know, we've all
heard due to the corruption, though.
Yeah, but you've all heard of like Martin Luther King. He's a very famous, well-known person that
I had a dream. I actually had a dream of Martin Luther King the other day. He came into my dream. It was pretty amazing. But anyway, carry on.
All right. Well, basically, this was a call like for complete break from papal Christianity, ending the churchmen's reign over the minds of people. And so that led to the idea that people should be able to have access to the scriptures personally and to interpret them as they want to without having middlemen. And the churchmen were effectively that middlemen between God and the population. So it was around about the 1600s that there was a big upheaval with the old worldview being challenged. And that's when you start to see things like astronomy coming in and
science.
Yeah, science.
People started to explore and go, well, let's do it for ourselves then. Let's go out there and find out what we are and why we're here. You know, we need purpose. Again, it's coming back to that first insight that we spoke about, purpose and meaning. We need that to carry on. So,
they needed something else to follow. I mean, if you have been following the concept that there's a spiritual way of living, and that's crumbled because of the things that they observed, they needed to have something else to live for.
So they sent out all these explorers and scientists, and people sort of waited around a bit, going, all right, well, we'll hear back from them soon. And they eventually came back, and of course they found some cool things with nature and all of that, but no real answer to, well, where is God, or is there a God, or what even are we, and who put us here on this earth, or, you know, all of these big, big questions that people were asking. And so from there, they sort of just got a bit distracted, really, didn't they, for the next few hundred years?
Well, basically, they needed science was about getting solid evidence. They wanted something that they could actually say, okay, this is for sure. This is something that's fact. And so they basically went out and they named every part of the whole world, attempting to like discover why the universe operates. And the conclusion eventually was that there's got to be some natural law that has a direct, understandable cause. And that's where we lost that concept of creating what we'd refer to as like a secular security. And that's when the economic security became a big thing. And that's what replaced the spiritual one. Basically, though, I guess everyone was working to try and make life more comfortable.
Yeah, they thought, well, while we're waiting for the answers, we may as well make ourselves comfortable and have some fun. And boom, that's the whole economic revolution. And, you know, we started playing with what we had around us, like copper, gold, metal, creating things, building things, you know, creating planes. We started flying. And then all of that is great and super exciting. And we got caught up in it. And not that that's bad.
No. Technology has
been amazing for human evolution. It's been an essential part of our journey.
Exactly. But at the end of the day, what was happening was that essentially the original question was being repressed. It was like the original question was almost forgotten. We still don't know what we're surviving for. Essentially, you know, what the original question was. We had so many other things to distract us.
Yeah, it's distraction. And I think that comes to the modern day realization of, you know, the typical businessman who chases and chases the ladder up the ladder and money and finally gets there
and goes, what's it all for?
What's it for? I don't feel any better than I did before all of this. I have millions of dollars. I can do anything I want, fly anywhere I want, live in any house.
So that's the distraction.
But I'm not happy. I still don't know the meaning of my life. Yeah. What is it? So that really is just a smack in the face realization for all of us that materialism and building your life may be good and more comfortable and bring you joy, but at the end of the day, it doesn't answer the biggest question and the most important question, and doesn't supply real love, that feeling that we are all chasing, really, to live in a life of love and joy and happiness.
So I guess the end thing is that the second insight is really about showing us how to observe our consciousness of through a historical time, not just from, as I say, just our own lifetime, but from the perspective of that whole millennium. We've spent enough time now after 1,000 years. It's time to maybe wake up from that preoccupation and consider that original question, what's behind life?
And the second insight then, it does go on to saying that this is now awakening. This new spiritual world is here and we're amongst it, and people are now talking about it and going, well, yeah, we realize that we're moving on to a new way of living, not just chasing dollars and chasing a house. It's much more than that. We're actually the day-to-day people, the people that I know, and, you know, we're all actually going, the most important thing is finding what makes you happy. That's the end goal.
Yeah.
And it's happening. It's actually happening. So
yeah, well, more and more people are, you know, waking up each day wondering why they're getting into their cars and heading off to
something that they hate.
Yeah.
Something that has no purpose. And they're going, I'm purely doing this for money, and that's not a good enough excuse to keep doing this. No. So more people are actually quitting their jobs, changing their careers, leaving their partners that are making them happy, finding truly fulfilling relationships and creating magical lives, which is just amazing to be alive at this time.
And not getting ahead of ourselves, but yes, getting ahead of ourselves. That's where we end up at the very end of the insights, is talking about that aspect. But in between, we've got a lot more insights to go. So
yeah, it's really, it does get to sort of that utopian living, isn't it? Which is something that we've always dreamt of having, but
But, okay, so that's really the first two insights, which are pretty easy to understand for most people.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing. It's quite basic. Yep. It's just sort of giving you an overview and an introduction of what's happened and happening at this time.
And as I said, this is all taking place in a sort of novel format.
Yeah, so he goes on a journey and he meets people and they have these cool conversations and, yeah, it's really exciting.
And so the insights actually occur to and while he's on this journey. So,
and they're actually in paper manuscripts that are written. So he's reading them and then things are happening to him as they're
reading. It actually comes from a manuscript that was supposedly written
Peru.
Back in, well, in 600 BC was the original date that they had for this these manuscripts. And so bit by bit over the adventure, these manuscript parts come to light and
coincidentally come to him
at the right time when he needs them,
of course,
and gets to learn them one by one. And you know, it can't be done in out of order. It has to come in the insight after insight, because they build on each other. You know, it's not just an insight isolated. The first one brings in the second one and heralds the third one and the fourth.
They most certainly build onto each other. Yep. Like, for example, particularly, we'll go on to the third one now, but particularly the fourth and fifth insight really build on each other. I love those. So the third one goes on to the realization that everything that we build and that we live around, the whole world is energy. It's an energetic field that we are all co-creating and connected with. There is nothing separate from one another. People started to realize that I'm not just me separate, I am part of a conscious mind of oneness, really. And the whole idea of karma sort of came into play as well, where it's like, not so much you do something bad, you're going to get punished from God. It's not so much about that. It's more that it's an energy. It's a way of looking at it energetically.
Well, yeah, it's what they refers to it is, it's we need to learn to perceive what was formerly like an invisible type of energy. And so the old skeptical attitude was great when we're exploring the more visible and obvious phenomena, like, you know, botany and geography and weather patterns and things. You know, science is very good at being able to understand things like that, observable phenomena. But there are some things that are more difficult to study and they're more subtle. And it's like when you try to observe plants as energy, you need to think of, you know, a lot of people, we receive energy from plants. When we consume plants, we're actually receiving the energy. But there are healthy plants and there are unhealthy plants. And so depending on how those plants have interacted with their environment as to whether they have more higher nutritional value that we can then take in as energy. So there's a lot of talk about over the years, you know, hugging trees and talking to plants and things like that.
Which everyone thought, oh yeah, whatever, crazy hippie, go hug a tree out in the forest. But
there's looking, lots of evidence
looking
about
it
that.
In the scientific way is you are actually interacting with that natural energy, high vibrational energy, which rubs off and has an effect on your own body's energy, and you actually exchange energy.
Well, there's studies that show that the health of plants are also related to like the energy relationships around them. So plants that have had like direct human attention, like when you talk to them or touch them or fiddle with them or have some interaction with them, that's when they tend to have a higher, more potency, like
they
nutritionally.
Thrive.
Yeah, they've
they
got
thrive.
More protein, more carbs, more vitamins, more minerals. They grow faster, they're stronger.
Yeah.
And insects don't tend to interfere with them as much. So this is where the work was being done by, you know, researchers showing that energy emanates from plants. And we know about plant auras. You know, you've heard about Curly and photography and how you can image plants or image not just plants but everything.
Yeah, well, anything gives off an aura, especially live plants, animals and humans. But everything does have an energetic aura around it, a field that we can interact with, especially with our minds.
Yeah.
But what I was most interested in the third insight was the evolution of matter.
Now, this is interesting.
That was in the third insight, wasn't it?
Yeah, so basically...
Particularly, this is... Mum will be able to explain this better than I, because she has a Bachelor of Science. So she actually understands all of the periodic table.
Yes.
I get it, but in regards to the words, like the gases and things, yeah. like the okay. original gases so that formed then into... Yeah. higher vibrating solids which created the universe.
Yeah. So if I go back
Let's go back to that.
Yeah. When I was studying my science it's a human science degree, natural science degree, but essentially the periodic table, when I first saw it, I was like, "Oh my God, how am I ever going to learn that?" And that's where I remember having an exam that I had to know the periodic table inside out, and I learned it off by heart. And I thought at the time, why do I need to know this?
Why the hell would I ever use yes. this stuff?
Why am I doing this chemistry? But
never.
A couple of years later, I really appreciate it so much.
I bet you do.
I can envisage it in my mind. I can see the table and I understand it really, really well now.
Because you understand the fundamental, creation of the matter all around us.
Yeah.
So initially it's energy, really, well, but then how does it become from pure oneness energy into the physical world? Take us through that journey.
Okay. So the concept that there's nothing's truly solid. Matter is just energy vibrating at a certain level. So in the beginning, matter existed only in its very simplest vibratory form. You know, it's the element, which is the first one on the periodic table, which is hydrogen. And that's the element that you'll find is the most abundant in our environment. Or in our atmosphere. And so essentially what was originally was just, the universe was just full of hydrogen. And hydrogen is a gas. And so as hydrogen atoms gravitated together and they reached like a sufficient density, it began to heat up and burn. And that's what became what we call stars. And in this burning, the hydrogen fuses together and it leapt into the next higher vibration, which is the element we call helium. So these are the two that you'll see on the very first top level of the periodic table. And so these are gases. And so essentially that's what we're seeing is the energy that becomes heated and basically leaps into the next higher vibration.
And so, and by higher vibration, it's literally vibrating at a higher pace.
Yes, so there's more density to it. So on the periodic table, you'll see that every... element has a number, and that is the atomic mass or the weight of each one. So everything is becoming more solid and heavier. And so as you go down the periodic table, you know, from something that's a gas at the top to something like, think of, you know, something like gold, which is heavy and solid. That's, you know, way down in the sixth.
Hence, it would
row.
Have obviously it's created much later or later yes. after those initial universal elements.
Yeah. So basically, if you think back to when the sun was forming, it's like pockets of matter fell into the orbit, and one of them, the Earth, contained all those newly created elements, which included carbon. And when the Earth cooled, the gases migrated to the surface, and then that formed water vapor. The rains formed, that formed oceans. The world then had the oceans, but it also had the light and warmth from that sun. And basically, the next matter that leapt forth from the vibratory level of carbon became a much more complex state, which was the vibration represented by the amino acids.
So at that stage, really, if we take a closer look, carbon is the key to life.
Carbon is the most basic matter of life, but...
It was the big leap into
well, from carbon
plant,
into
wasn't
amino
it?
Acids. And so for the first time, that level of vibration, though, wasn't stable in and of itself. It had to continually absorb other matter to sustain its vibration. And that's when it had to basically... Well, life split into two distinct forms at that stage. One being forming into plants, which lived on inorganic matter, and turned these elements into food that utilised carbon dioxide, and as a byproduct, plants released oxygen to the world for the first time.
And that is when animals could come into
Correct.
Play because they needed the oxygen, but before that, they actually couldn't.
Well, there was lots of oxygen in the water And so there were already animals in the water, but...
That's why life started in the water.
Correct.
And that's why people say we come from the ocean.
Yeah.
And the whole idea of mermaids and all of that mythical stuff is that humans came from water, and we did, but in this type of way.
Yeah, well, animals absorb only organic life to sustain their vibration. And when there's enough oxygen created in the atmosphere, that's when the trek out of the oceans to land began, and eventually creating the exact conditions that humans needed to.
Yeah, but humans from where? Let's go back to from animal, from the ocean onto the land. That's talking about, for example, sharks and then crocodiles. Crocodiles, you know, for example, they're in the water and going onto the...
I mean, there was amphibians that... there's a lot of science that goes back through that. And that's why science is really important, because...
It is, really.
It can track... And history is really important, because we can look back and we can see through the ages... what's actually happened. So everything that we're talking about here happened, but we can scientifically verify all of that. And that's where science has been very important in the last 500, well, not just the last 500 years, but it's grown to be something that is important for us to understand our history and how we can go back to see what the very beginnings were.
But it's only till now that, well, more recently, that science has actually dabbled into the spiritual world, hasn't it?
Well,
it's been more preoccupied with matter and physical.
Yeah, well, they both really have the same question. It's just going about it in a different matter.
Yeah, and but together it can find the true answer.
Yeah, well, that's where we're at now. We've got the benefit of the history of being able to look back. We've got the very skepticism came about because of all of that stuff that happened in the Middle Ages with the churchmen. That's where science came from. It was a skepticism of somebody saying something that wasn't really true. And so
that's sort of stuck in the human consciousness ever since, and it's hard to let go of that.
So we need both. We need skepticism, and we need to also recognise that there's not everything is going to be a known factor for us. It's going to take time for us to evolve to understand all of the things that that are. And that's where we are now.
Well, yeah, thanks for that little history lesson on how energy actually makes it into physical, appearing physical form.
Exactly.
It's actually not. It's the reason why I say appearing is because it is still energy vibrating. It's just at such a rapid pace that it creates like a dense sort of vision, doesn't it? A creation, an image. And that is our bodies, in fact. And going on to that, actually, that our bodies are that vibrating energy, it does actually take us on to the fourth insight. The fourth insight being the struggle for energy, power. Now, that's our favorite one to talk about, because we are humans and, you know, day to day we have to experience all these challenges and things like that. So we know we can directly relate as a human to this fourth insight being like, yeah, the struggle for power, whether it's in couples, in your job, with your children, anything. We can all relate to one way or another, friendships. And this fourth insight makes us look closer at why do we struggle for power? Like,
yeah,
why do we actually... have these sort of fights subconsciously or consciously. There's this sort of underlying message that the fourth insight actually goes into and explains it for the first time. I had read it, I was like, that makes complete sense to me why people do these things and whether they know they do it or not. But once you're aware and enlightened by this insight...
Well, we see it every day, don't we? You know, you put on the radio or the television or anything like that and you will see it. You will see
control,
it in the news. Control.
Control, control, control. People trying to control each other,
the
whether
human
it's
world
religion,
is
war...
Big competition for energy and for power.
Yeah, power and greed.
And so I guess eventually humans see the universe as comprised of like... eventually humans will see the universe as like one big dynamic energy that could sustain us and respond to our expectations.
But that may not be in everyone's or mass critical consciousness yet. And
no.
So people think they have to get their energy and boost their energy by actually almost stealing it from somewhere else,
because they feel
boosting
weak.
Their ego
they
in
feel
some
like
way.
They're lacking in some way, they're insecure, and because they feel that they're in a deficit situation, they try to increase their own personal energy, and the only manner that they've known that to do is by psychologically stealing it from other people.
Yeah, that's
basically an unconscious competition that underlies human conflict in our world.
But in reality, it actually does happen. Like, if you are talking to someone, you're conversing in conversation, right? Then, like, you say something, and then you seem like you have the upper hand, and then their energy is actually going into you when they're listening to you. They're actually sending you energy, and it actually, on a scientific level, is boosting your energy.
Well, that's where the ego...
It's attention.
Yeah, ego comes into, you know, when someone's ego is being boosted, they feel more energy. They feel lifted, and they feel stronger. And so the other
person...
And
they feel like they can do anything. They're invincible, but it's short-lived.
Yes.
This is the thing, because it's not real energy.
No.
It's just psychological...
It's stealing little bits from other people and trying
bit
to
here,
do it
a bit
over
there,
and over and over.
Trying to make up your energy, and it's not going to sustain your energy. No. You're going to drop... And you're going to have to go look for more sources.
Yeah.
And so that's really what the fourth insight goes on about. And there was one particular bit in it that was really interesting. It talks about, you know, the whole idea of love and finding your other half, your soulmate, and all of this. And it was going into how when you... find someone that you're intensely attracted to, it's actually saying stay away, because what's happening is if you are going around thinking, if you're not feeling whole, if your fuel tank isn't filled up, you're going to be going around whole, and then you might encounter another person going around whole with their energy not filled up.
Well, they're not whole. It's
they're not whole.
They're
yeah.
actually
they haven't found their complete self or
so it's
energy.
Somebody who's looking, and we hear about opposites attract. It's like
opposites attract. Yeah,
somebody is looking for the other half.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
To feel complete. So often you'll have a relationship that's built on two people, two halves coming together to try and get
create
a
whole.
And that's all an addictive feeling.
It is.
It's actually, oh my God, I feel whole now, so I don't want to let this person go.
Yeah, and you can get very attached. And then that's where like breakups can be so hard, because you feel like literally half of you has been torn away from you, and you don't actually feel like a person anymore. Mm. So, but it goes into that saying that strong attraction is actually something to be very careful of, and to don't fall into that addiction of feeling.
We need to try and find our own whole self, and find a person that's also experienced that benefit of becoming a whole person, where you can be an individual and live your life without needing somebody else to complete you. But when you do come together, it's an even more beautiful experience, because you're coming together as two wholes.
Yeah. Absolutely. So it's a very, very wholesome relationship,
yes.
isn't it? Oh, I'm so...
Pretty hard.
So lame.
Pretty hard, but...
Pretty hard to find, because it's rare for a whole person, isn't it? Like,
not many of them out there, not many of us.
How many are there?
Exactly. I'm sure that we've still got a lot of building to make ourselves fully whole as well.
Exactly. So. But it's a really important insight there for humans, because... We're not going to find a wholesome, happy life if we keep depending on other people for our energy.
But it can also come about in the way that he talks about these four different types, where there's what he refers to as the intimidator.
The poor me.
The poor me. The
interrogator.
And the aloof.
So they're like the four control dramas that he categorizes humans into. That we all generally fall into one of those dominant control dramas that we play out over and over again in conversations.
And we have them all within us. It's just that there'll be one that's more
stronger
or dominating within you. And it often is something you can reflect back and look at your environment, your family history, your parents.
He says that actually, say, your mum was aloof, and your dad was a poor me, for example, he's like, you, then it would have created you to be an interrogator, for example, because, you know, your mum was always very aloof and didn't give you much. She's very, you know, that's her way of getting energy, was people prying her and going, hey, give me more, you know, things like that.
Yeah, the interrogator's way of being.
And so it created an interrogator who had to get energy. They had to ask questions and go, hey, answer me, look at me, blah, blah, blah. Mm. And so that carries on throughout their other relationships through the rest of their lives. And until you can actually ponder and think about which one you may be and which one you play out, then it's once you're aware of it, you can actually let go of that drama and start having more deeper, fulfilling relationships that don't have all this drama and issues and roller coaster rides throughout them. Yeah. And he also talks about when you are talking to someone about an issue or something, and you realize they're actually playing out their drama, if you can catch it out and actually just tell them, even if they're not aware of the Celestine prophecy or these dramas or anything, just actually tell them, like, hey, I see what you're doing right now to get my attention or to sort of have the upper hand in this. It actually catches them off guard, and it almost stops them from carrying on with that play, that drama. So that's a little side note to do, is actually just honestly say to someone, hey, I see what you're doing and this isn't working.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times if you're feeling like you're being interrogated, or if you're feeling like you're being, what's the other one?
Poor me, like you're sucked into a poor me story.
If you're sitting there feeling those feelings,
like someone's,
if you
complaining,
actually become aware and look at it, then you can actually understand this is just a way of being that you've decided to allow yourself to be in, and that you can change that by simply bringing it to your awareness and recognizing that doesn't have to be the way it is. And so a lot of people always ask how they can get out of a particular situation where they're feeling anxious, etc. And it really comes down to making sure you have an awareness, almost like an outside observer. Be an outside observer of your own state. And then you can see what you're doing. And when you've actually got that awareness, it's very simple to look at it and go, okay, I can recognize what I'm experiencing here, and I don't have to feel that way. And you can change your self-image, you can change your state of anxiety or any of those things very, very quickly by bringing that awareness.
And I love that. That's what I've been practicing a lot, is catching it straight away when that idea or even a feeling of sadness or something comes in, and I just remind myself, go, hey, it's all my choice. And yep. You know, I go on in such a happier mood, like instantly. It's just been something super profound to transform my daily life.
And that's where the whole concept of what we're doing here is with the book reviews. We want to bring forth some of the things that we found that have made us really happy, made us really feel like there's something that we can learn to change the way that we experience our life every day. And hopefully it'll be something that you can pick up and do for yourselves as well. So at the end of the day, the books that we're picking and choosing to look at are going to be ones that we found to be very, very insightful for us.
And very transformative on our
and
journeys.
The Celestine Prophecy is too large a series to do in one or two podcasts. It's going to take us a few podcasts to get through.
Oh yeah, we're only up to the fourth, and we are going to finish up here now, but the fifth one that we will go on to in our next podcast is truly my favorite. It's the most magical insight for anyone to realize. If you can grasp it and do it, your life will be so transformed. And it does build off the fourth insight very much in regards to finding energy sources, isn't it? So we will leave it there, and next time we'll head straight into the fifth insight. Woohoo! Yep. All right, thanks for listening, guys. And I'm going to end it on my little line that I love to say that Mum always gets wrong. May the light be with you.
And also with you.
Way! She got it.
Bye, guys.
Bye.